You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio.
This is the Quality News Network. Assassinated Pakistani opposition leader Benazir Bhutto was laid to rest today. Her simple wooden coffin placed next to her father's at the family's mausoleum. Hundreds of thousands of mourners accompanied Bhutto's body alongside her husband and three children. Bhutto led the country's most popular opposition party that was expected to win the majority of parliamentary seats in the upcoming elections. Many of her supporters are venting their fury on the government of President Pervez Musharraf. Despite the government's claims that Al-Qaeda was responsible for Bhutto's assassination, angry crowds rampaged through several cities, blaming their own government for the killing. The military is out in force in the streets. Vehicles and buildings have been looted and burned. At least 23 people have been killed. Leaders throughout the world are urging nuclear-armed Pakistan not to cancel scheduled January elections. In Baghdad, a car bomb set off in a busy marketplace killed at least 14 people. The blast ended a relatively quiet holiday season. Early next month, President Bush will discuss efforts to counter Kurdish rebels with the President of Turkey. President Abdullah Gul will visit the White House for the first time ever on January 8th. Tensions are rising over cross-border attacks between rebels of the Kurdistan Workers' Party and the Turkish military. Russia has vehemently denied it is selling sophisticated anti-missile defense systems to Iran. The denial contradicts the Iranian defense minister's remarks Wednesday that Moscow had agreed to a deal. On the Indonesian island of Java, the death toll from Christmas landslides has risen to 85. Searchers are still pulling bodies out of the mud. Six French humanitarian aid workers are being flown home today from Chad as part of an extradition treaty which allows them to serve their prison terms in France. An African court sentenced them to 8 years of hard labor for their attempt to airlift 103 children out of Chad to foster homes in Paris. The weather continues to wreak havoc with holiday travel plans. Snow in Chicago grounded more than 400 flights at O'Hare Airport before midday today. New Jersey, convicted sex offenders who use the Internet to commit their crimes will be banned from going online under legislation just signed into law. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
P.M. Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Investors have been warned Citigroup may be forced to write off as much as $18.7 billion in the fourth quarter, far more than previously expected. Orders for durable goods rose in November for the first time in 4 months. However, the increase was very small, far more modest than Commerce Department's predicted. Also disappointing analysts, U.S. sales of new homes dropped 9% in November, a steeper fall than expected, and the lowest in 12 years. On the other side of the Atlantic, house prices also dropped. In the U.K., prices fell by 0.5% in December. Nationwide Building Society said that drop followed a 0.8% decline in November. Walmart says it's closed its movie download service that it just started up less than a year ago. Store spokesperson said the decision was made after Hewlett-Packard decided to discontinue the software that ran the site. No word on whether Walmart may restart the site with new software. Light sweet crude is trading at $96 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold is at $842.70 an ounce. That's up $10.90. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended up 6 points at 13,365. The Nasdaq finished up 2, and the S&P 500 closed up 2 as well. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Six minutes past the hour on this, the 28th day of December, 2007, whatever that means. And it is the last show for the year 2007. I guess this falls under the broad philosophical heading of program notes, but there will be no live programming on the horn either Monday or Tuesday. We'll all be back on Wednesday, just as it was this week. This evening, however, we do have for you this live incarnation of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, the world's most fabulous LGBTQQS program. I get lost in all the Qs. Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold. And I think he's got a great show lined up, and you should probably stick around for all 5 hours. So, you know, nothing good, nothing doing Monday and Tuesday, and since I worked my rear end off on Christmas Day, I'm taking New Year's Day, plopping my butt in front of the television, and I'm going to watch me some college bowl games, and you can just, you know, oh, there goes Bob getting sucked into the sports paradigm again. Well, you know, I get to get sucked into something once in a while. You know, I can't just sit here do the breaststroke through the fetid swamp and filth of politics and the demise of our culture, you know, every day. I get to sit and watch college football once in a while. Thank you very much. So, you know, save those emails. speaking of swamps, so anyway, that's what's going to happen Monday and Tuesday. But speaking of swamps, I went around, you know, I do a considerable amount, as do all the hosts on this network, a considerable amount of show prep on any given day, and usually that involves a whole lot of reading on a whole lot of different topics, going, yes, yeah, no, not that, no, no, let's see, Jamie Lynn Spears can burn in hell, okay, and, you know, that kind of thing. Boy, I didn't get to do any of that today. You learn a little bit about journalism just trying to pull a show together, because there's nothing out there but Benazir Bhutto. And I don't mean to sound like I'm taking away from the people who are grieving for her or trying to dismiss or diminish in any wise the gravity of her assassination. That is not what I'm trying to say here. But I'm pretty sure that there are other things going on in the world. God forbid, however, that you should actually get the journalism industry to take note of that fact. Although some of the Benazir Bhutto stuff is pretty interesting, actually. Not the least of which are the stories that came out today. One, that there was no autopsy. And no one seems to know why there was no autopsy. But also the
fact that apparently she was, you know, all the reportage yesterday was that Benazir Bhutto had been shot and then blown up. That she'd been shot in the neck, that she'd been shot in the chest. Well, published reports out today indicate that neither of that those are true. No bullet holes in Benazir Bhutto. And what's more, she had a dent, a fracture, a cave-in of her skull. And, you know, the doctor, the lead doctor at the prestigious hospital in Rawalpindi, opining that, you know, that was the head injury that was proved to be her mortal injury. So, honest to Pete, who knows what killed this woman? Who knows who killed this woman? Or how they did it? They say that they struggled for quite some time trying to revive her, but had no luck. We have here audio from inside the hospital at Rawalpindi.
I feel fine.
Well, do us a favor.
You think I'll go for a walk?
I feel happy. Thanks very much. Watch out.
You just, you can't get around feeling like there was probably some, no pun intended, skullduggery in this sad and sordid process. The other thing going around that I believe basically got legs first last night on Mike Malloy's program is this interview that Benazir Bhutto did with David Frost at the beginning of this month of December, in which she said rather casually, and I'm not going to play the audio for you. Many of you are Malloy listeners, and you've already heard the audio, or you've gone to YouTube and you've seen it for yourself. You can do so at your leisure. But in talking to, early in the interview, in talking to David Frost about her well-being and about the threats against her life, she said that she had written to Pervez Musharraf and given several names, and she gave the names that she had given. And at one point, she casually says, and Hamza bin Laden, the son of Osama bin Laden, yada, 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 somebody else, blah, 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 blah. And then there's so-and-so, and he's the man who murdered Osama bin Laden. And just keeps going. And David Frost doesn't interrupt her, doesn't say, I beg your pardon, what? Murdered whom? It's just taken as read. And not another word about it. Now, the focus has been her comment on the man who murdered Osama bin Laden. For me, it sort of dovetailed backwards into her mention of bin Laden's son as a primary threat on her life, which I find interesting because a lot of people have said, well, you know, she just misspoke. She didn't mean to say Osama bin Laden. She meant to say Daniel Pearl. You know, because the two names sound so much alike. But prior to that, she had mentioned bin Laden's son, Hamza. Is that his name, Hamza? I think it is. And did not mention Osama. So you wonder what she knew and how much of it she knew and what quantity became a matter of knowing and saying too much. Because you see, for the last 7 years or so, we have lived in a country where the one thing we know is that information is doled out by drops and dribbles. And the Johnny-on-the-spot professional press corps repeats dutifully whatever is told it by the White House, so that information via journalism in these United States is, to say the least, suspect and at best only marginally reliable. So that was somewhat interesting. But while that did garner some interest in what you might call the liberal blogosphere, it has yet to register in the professional journalism industry with anyone asking any sort of significant questions from the mainstream media outlets. You know how it goes.
Bueller.
Hamza, Bin Laden. You know what I mean. So that's what confronts us this evening, this last evening of live broadcasting of this poor bedraggled year, 2007. I don't have a year in review planned for you. Not because I can't plan or because and not because I'm lazy, but because, well, because I'm cantankerous. What we do have tonight is the front porch, your chance to interact if you so choose, and if people dial in at the same time, to interact with other horn listeners and to help help facilitate this resurgent American dialogue that is the stock in trade of the horn. We have that going this evening. And if you wish to talk a little bit about what you think to have been the most significant stories, or, you know, perhaps more particularly, what were the most significant non-stories of 2007? It was almost a year ago that Democrats took the reins of a Congress, reins that we had given them with certain understandings, that they would stand up to George Bush, that they would not cave in, that they would not wet themselves at the mention of the word liberal, that they would move steadily, forthrightly, honestly, and meaningfully toward an end to the occupation of Iraq, that we would begin to talk about real issues that confront this nation, that we would not turn a blind eye toward the criminal conduct that is the everyday business of the Bush White House. I put the question to you, have we gotten anything approaching the benefit of our bargain? Shall I give you my short Reader's Digest condensed version of the answer to that question? Sure I will. No, we haven't. No, we haven't. Impeachment is still off the table, be it impeachment of Dick Cheney, impeachment of George Bush, impeachment of anybody is off the table and stays there because we have a Speaker of the House who lacks anything approaching what one might call political courage. Has the obstructionism in the Senate been dealt with by that paragon of manliness, Harry Reid? Nah, because the only thing hairy about him is his first name. So, what are the stories, but more importantly, what are the non-stories? What didn't happen that should have happened in 2007? I invite you to opine with that. We have one caller on the line. If you want to start up the front porch, it takes more than one caller on hold. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4 head-on. That's the toll-free number. If you need us to carry the freight, we will be more than happy to do so. If, however, you have a long-distance, unlimited plan of your own, you can use 304-658-5453, and that'll fire things up. Again, this is your last chance to get anything said in 2007. It's your last chance to get anything said until Wednesday of next week. So, please, if you've got something you want to say, chime right in. There are, God knows it took some digging, but there are other stories out there this evening. And the Benazir Bhutto story, there is, how should we refer to it? There are sequelae to that story. There are ripples out of that story, ripples on the pond. This may well have been the one story that exposed Reverend Mike Huckabee to be the absolute moron that he is. You do realize that he apologized for the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. He said, "We tender our apologies to the people of Pakistan." One wonders if there was an element of Freudian slip in that. Can't help wondering. He said, "Pakistan has real problems with the Afghan tribes on its eastern border. There's only one problem. The Afghan tribes are on Pakistan's western border." East, west, what's it matter in that part of the world, right? I mean, after all, we let George Bush be president, and he didn't even name Musharraf's name when he took office. Do you remember that? Well, what's the leader of Pakistan's name, Mr. Bush? General. General. He's a general. Not making that up. That's what he said. So, let's see here. Let's go to the phones and see who we've got.
Hi.
Well, hey, Juanita, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm pretty good. What's going on?
I just wanted to say what I think should have been done. For the main thing should have been
okay.
All our troops.
Well, stand by one second. Let me get the second party on the line here.
Okay.
Hi, who have I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan, how are you? Juanita, Susan.
Hi,
Susan, Juanita. I think you know each other.
Hi, Juanita.
Yes.
Juanita.
Okay, go.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, the number one thing that I think should have been done is all of our troops should be home and been home for at least 6 months by now. That is the number one thing. And also impeachment.
2007 may well be judged for the failure on both of those counts. Susan, what about you?
Well, besides that, I came across something dated the 27th of December. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, I should say, has, in a new ruling, has determined that employers can reduce or eliminate health benefits for retirees when they turn 65 and become eligible for Medicare.
Charming, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that means if you are in a job, the company can drop your health coverage willy-nilly the minute you become eligible for health care, for Medicare.
Right, so that then you won't have... Because what usually happens, and I'm going on this by what I saw happen with my father and mother, he had retirement health care coverage through the company for whom he had worked, and that became his supplemental coverage. And what it did was it basically paid anything that Medicare didn't.
Exactly. And what's really appalling is the fact that, God, I don't know, they're claiming that, the preamble says the new regulation published Wednesday in the Federal Register says, quote, "The final rule is not intended to encourage employers to eliminate any retiree health benefits that may currently provide."
Oh, gosh, no.
What? No.
Yeah, well, you want to see this little push I'm sitting on? That's about how much your word is worth.
Yeah. And that's what will happen. It's not meant to do that, but, that might be a consequence of it.
Yes.
That'll just be because they misread it. They misinterpreted it. That's not what the Bush administration is saying.
Yeah, as they turn around to Kaiser and their other hospital contributors and say, did we do it right? Did we do it right? Gonna rub my tummy now?
Yeah. And of course, this, I think, let's see, yeah, I first saw that story on the 26th, and it was conveniently timed to make sure that it would be picked up by as few organizations as humanly possible, part of a new, you know, part of a holiday news dump.
Exactly. Mm.
And it's very, very quiet. You, I hadn't gotten to the story yet. You mentioned it first here, and I haven't heard it in many other places, Susan. Yes?
Let's see. The AARP is asking the Supreme Court to review the decision.
Well, they can ask till they turn blue in the face, but until somebody sues somebody.
Well, this is actually, this is part of a, apparently this is part of a judgment from the Court of Appeals from the Third Circuit.
Well, if AARP is a party to that Court of Appeals case, they have a right to appeal it.
And so I'm hoping they do. At least then they've got the bucks to do it.
Yeah, but
most of this, we can't afford it.
You know, the thing is, it's an EEOC decision. It is most easily remedied by a president coming in and saying, reverse that, because the EEOC is, after all, a function of the, it's a function of the executive branch.
Yeah, all it would take is a executive order. Sign your name, President, whoever. Hopefully a Democrat.
Although,
please let it be a Democrat.
Yeah, please, I know. I know. Because the idea of having two presidents in succession, see how I didn't use the word straight, the idea of having two presidents in succession who are geographically illiterate is just terrifying. And
well,
that's
not only that, but does Huckstorby is such a fanatic, I won't stay in the same country with him.
Oh. Yeah, one may only hope that the American people will reject him. However, as I've noted in the past, we reject we assume that the American people will do so at our own peril.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, make no assumptions.
Oh, I'm not. But my backup plan is throw myself on the Canadians' mercy and say help.
Well, I certainly hope it doesn't come to that, but I understand it. Juanita, bringing the troops home and starting impeachment, you got anything else?
Oh, I got a lot of things, but some of it, you know, was, to me, that should have already been done. And also, they should be working on some kind of health care for others, and of course, that children thing should have been passed. He's talking about, have you heard he's talking about vetoing some defense bill now?
It was my understanding he did veto it.
He did veto
well,
it.
Well, I guess it's a different one, I don't know. It's, he says something that it would affect Iraq too much.
Yeah, well, there was a provision in the bill, Juanita, that would have allowed, and see, this is, quite fascinating, really, because if you recall, we invaded Iraq because Saddam Hussein was an evil dictator who brutalized his own people, right?
Yeah.
Remember all that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a segment in the bill that would have allowed lawyers suing on behalf of people harmed by Saddam Hussein to freeze Iraqi assets in American banks. And that is what brought on the veto.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
So he may have been a brutal dictator, but that's no reason to hold it against the money. And the people that he did brutalize have no right to a day in court in which to seek redress from the Iraqi treasury for the harm that was done them.
Well, do you know, that's one of the first things that I noticed about him when, you know,
here in Florida when we were having in 2000. They don't say too much about this, but he immediately, as soon as Gore said he was going to go, you know, request recounts,
mm-hmm.
he immediately was going to go to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court at that time turned it down. And I thought then, he doesn't want us to have the right to sue. So he wants to use whatever he can. And boy, does he. But they don't want us to have any kind of rights.
No, because you know, rights are for a limited group of people. Susan, you were going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, she just hit it right on the head. The only people who are allowed to have rights are the people who have money. Lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
And power. You know, I was shocked. I don't know how much control they have over the content on it, but I was rather shocked today. I was wandering around Huffington Post, and lo and behold, there's this big splashy ad that shows an aging couple, a Korean couple in Washington, D.C., and it says, victims of lawsuit abuse.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I've seen that, too.
And
I haven't seen that, but that's what they spread around. And a lot of people believe that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the couple who were sued over a lost pair of pants.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I heard about that.
And, of course, it played right into the hands of that AstroTurf group, Citizens Against Lawsuit Abuse, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the insurance industry.
But you notice that those people that don't want us to have any kind of rights, like a lot of the people that are trying to sue to get their insurance to pay for the hurricanes, Katrina, and other places, other ones, the big shots, I think, what's his face, this resigning the Senate?
Trent Lott.
Didn't he sue for his? He got his money.
I believe he already has gotten his money. Yes, I think
yeah,
you are correct.
Yeah, I do, too. And he's got that porch ready and waiting for Bush to come up there and sit on his swing.
Yeah.
But they don't want us. Like that child, you know, that Edwards sued for that had her inside sucked out.
Yeah.
They don't want people.
No,
like
that's
that
yeah, that's lawsuit abuse.
Recourse.
Right, that's lawsuit abuse. Suing a doctor for butchering one of your loved ones, that's lawsuit abuse.
Right.
And
you know, there's a lot of cases that people don't even sue. I sued a lot of doctors myself.
Juanita, the last time I looked at statistics, it's something well over 50% and perhaps approaching 80% of people who have a legitimate right to bring a lawsuit do not do so.
Right.
They just lump it. It's referred to as the lump it factor.
One of them. A number of times.
And that repeats itself all around the United States. But if you begin to hold these killer corporations to account, you hear the screaming, and I'm well familiar with it here in West Virginia, Juanita, because every year when the legislature meets, the United States Chamber of Commerce starts taking out full-page ads declaring that West Virginia is a judicial, this is a quote, judicial hellhole.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't help but wonder if they'll take that out again this year, now that we have a bought-and-paid-for Supreme Court that recently let a humongous $75 million judgment slide against the guy who owns the court now, Don Blankenship.
Well, I sent you an email, I don't know if it's pertaining to that, about Jim Hightower.
Mm-hmm.
Article about selling Appalachia,
yeah,
about the not being able before to completely cover up your rivers, but now that doesn't matter.
Right, giving away Appalachia. Yeah. Well, this is it's part and parcel of it. It's called the stream buffer zone, and
yeah.
It's been clarified by the Bush administration to say that the stream buffer buffer zone rule really doesn't apply to mountaintop removal mining.
Yeah.
I could say something to that, but it's neither. it's unprintable.
Well, you want to try it in the printable version?
I don't think I can because I start getting mad, and then the blue language comes out, and Agnes gets mad when I do that.
Well, that's true. I mean, you got to remember this. It's only 6:30 on the East Coast, and it's 3:30 where you are, Susan. So there might be kids in the room listening. So
let's just go with rassa frassa frassa.
The blag stag and not pull frazzleck and rattle all of that. Yeah, several times over. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, both of you, for chiming in. And a very happy new year to you both.
Happy new year to you both, too.
Let me ask you both, any particular New Year's traditions?
Stay home.
Yeah, what's the New Year food?
Well, it's supposed to be black-eyed peas.
I see. Southerner, okay.
And ham hocks.
Oh, yeah.
God, I love ham hocks. I can't.
Supposed to bring you all kind of good luck.
Right, and when I was growing up, either the cooked cabbage or the black-eyed peas would have an old-time silver dollar in it somewhere, and whoever got the silver dollar got the year's good luck.
I hadn't heard of that one.
I don't dare perpetuate that tradition with our family here because whichever child got the silver dollar would lord it over the other two until there were fists flying.
Yeah.
He can be taught, you know.
Well, sometime I'll tell you why I don't celebrate that anymore either.
Okay. You both have a safe and wonderful New Year. Stay off the roads New Year's Eve. That's just good advice.
I'm going to do my best.
All right.
Go to a funeral tomorrow, my friend's funeral.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, and she had a beautiful picture in the paper today. They finally have that in the paper. It's a beautiful picture of them.
Well, I'm sure it's a tough way to end a year, but there's never a good time for that kind of thing.
No, it isn't. It surely isn't. But that's part of life. It's a rough. When you first go through something like that.
Sure it is.
And a loved one. But it is part of life,
Well, get to the end of 2007 as best you can, and, with any luck, 2008 will be somewhat better.
I hope so. I certainly hope so.
Well,
but if we get a Republican in, forget it.
Yeah, I know.
I just would just as well to look for whatever.
I know.
Considering the people that are running, especially, I think the most sane is probably McCain, but I don't think I would trust him.
Yeah, well, but saying the most sane on the Republican side is McCain is not saying a lot for sanity, because...
Agreed. I totally agree with that. Okay.
All right. You take care, Juanita.
You too. Night-night.
You too.
Bye.
Night-night.
Susan, take care. All right. Our first little wandering up to the front porch for the evening. You want to join in, feel free. You are more than welcome to. The story that Susan brought up is, in fact, underreported at this point in time, and I think deliberately so. Everything she said was correct. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has declared that American corporations, not just one or two of them, American corporations who have retirees with health benefits that are a part of their retirement pension plan can simply dump them the instant that they turn 65 and become Medicare eligible. Such a lovely country that we live in. It's a worker's paradise, isn't it? What else could you possibly call it? And of course, would a Republican complain about that? Hell no. Well, you know, the free market. You know, honest to God, those are two words that I'm so disgusted with I can hardly stand to hear them anymore. Free market. Because when a Republican says free market, he says it in such a way that it almost has the cachet of a religious invocation, if you know what I mean. Okay, I can't. Well, I don't know. Sometimes I look up and I say, you know, Dad, I miss you terribly, but I guess it's good you went when you did. Because as of that ruling, his former employer, to whom he gave 30 years of his life in exchange for things like health benefits and a pension, would get to completely renege on the deal, back out, and not even run the risk of being called dishonorable in the process, because it has the imprimatur of the Bush Administration Equal Employment Opportunity Commission all over it. Kind of reminds me of a song.
Just grow stronger, and old rivers. if you're walking down the street sometime. Spot some hollow ancient eyes. Please don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say hello in there. Oh.
John Prine. Hello in there. And basically, you know, that's what the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, a commission that was formed for the purpose of seeing to it that people were able to get and keep jobs without regard to discrimination based on age, race, national origin, religion. And it is now being used as a tool by which we flog old people. It's easy. It is in this time of year that we look back at what has gone before, and mostly we tend to note the shortcomings. But for me, please don't go run the warm bath and get the single-sided razor blades out or anything. But 2007 was a study in what we did not accomplish, wasn't it? What Juanita said. The troops should have long been home by now. I mean, we won the war, right? They still can't come home. We still don't have health care for every single American. 47 million Americans are without health care, and we can't seem to get the Democratic Congress, the Democratic House of Representatives in particular, to get all that interested in H.R. 676, the Medicare for All Act. All these presidential candidates on the Democratic side have come out with their various and sundry different health care plans, all of which, with the exception of Dennis Kucinich, who backs H.R. 676, all of these plans, to some degree or another, continue to funnel money to the for-profit insurance industry. Continue to funnel money to an industry that makes its annual billions on the misery, agony, and death of Americans in extremis. And we can't find it in ourselves, this moral nation, this nation founded on Christian principles. We can't find it in ourselves to recognize that profiting by people's illness is the height of, and I don't use this word very often, sin. The height, the absolute apex, the Everest of sin. Oh, we talked a couple of nights ago about the guy at Goldman Sachs who got $68 million for his Christmas bonus in a year in which he screwed up more than he got right. Well, Christmas bonuses in that industry were up some 14% this year, if you didn't notice. Market go down, bonus go up. I don't know how that works. That's a kind of mathematics that I can't do. So, yeah, we had that story. You want another one? Want another one that'll make you scream? Well, I've got one for you. Do you remember David Brooks? We talked about him a month or so ago. David Brooks, who ran a company into the ground, mind you, ran a company that manufactured defective body armor for military personnel serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Overcharged the government monstrously. Made a fortune on that war profiteering. And then threw a $10 million bat mitzvah for his 13-year-old daughter that featured Don Henley, 50 Cent, and who was the other? Who was the other? Come on, come on. Nah, not Kiss. Aerosmith, wasn't it? Yeah, that guy. Just dipped by the heel in the blood of America's servicemen and women who used company funds just basically to prop up his incredibly lavish lifestyle. He just got admitted to home confinement, if I read the story correctly. Uh-huh. Yeah. Got the ankle bracelet treatment. Just charming. Just charming, isn't it? Hard to fathom. So, you know, don't worry. If you happen to be filthy rich, you can get an ankle bracelet. You can get house arrest. He hasn't been convicted yet. He was being held in lieu of bail. He is looking at freedom after 2 months in jail, but again, with the ankle bracelet. The requirement, he will have to convince prosecutors that they have full control of all his millions in assets so that he can't use them to flee. Wait for this, though. Wait for this. Prosecutors are a little bit bent out of shape because it turns out that he has already squirreled away millions of dollars in overseas accounts, recently having sent $4 million to a group of spiritual leaders in the African nation of Senegal. I'm guessing he didn't get one of those funny little emails that said, you know, no. Now, what did he get for his $4 million? I mean, he's not hiding funds or anything. He's not trying to keep people who were ripped off or maimed or no. He's not trying to dodge justice or anything or protect his assets. No. He told the prosecutors that the spiritual leaders in Senegal were paid $4 million. Sit down. Just sit down, because you're gonna want to be able to get your shoe off so you can throw it through a window. The spiritual leaders were paid $4 million to pray for his acquittal. This came in testimony a week ago. They were religious expenditures. Now, I kind of wish Mark Levine wasn't on vacation, because I could use the help here. Senegal, David Brooks threw a $10 million bat mitzvah for his 13-year-old daughter. I guess I could be leaping to conclusions, but I rather assumed from that David Brooks was Jewish. But he has paid $4 million to spiritual leaders in Senegal Is there a big Jewish community there of mystical guys who pray for the acquittal of that are Jewish? I mean, I did a little digging around. I couldn't find Temple Beth Senegal anywhere. No, and I didn't find anything that said, you know, it's $50,000 a prayer or anything like that. But you know what? He'll get away with it. Brooks' attorney, Paul Schechtman, only made a brief statement about the situation, saying only, quote, no money was sent to Senegal to hide assets. Oh, okay. It was sent for prayer. I'm in the wrong business. I am so in the wrong business. $4 million for prayer? I mean, I know several religions out there, Mr. Brooks, that will pray for you for free. Granted, none of them involve Benny Hinn or Creflo Dollar or Joyce Meyer or any of those people. Kenneth Copeland. But they will. They really will. They'll just sit right down and start praying for you without a dollar changing hands. But maybe maybe it works better, or maybe he thinks it works better. If a couple of $1 million of war profiteering blood money changes hands. So it's Friday night here on the Head On Radio Network. You know what that means. It's Front Porch Friday. You're welcome to chime in. News is next. I'm Bob Kincaid.
And the names of the heroes
and the Second World War came to an end. We forgave the Germans, and then we were friends. Though they murdered 6 million in the ovens they fried. Oh.
This is the Quality News Network. Just hours after the funeral of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, the Pakistani government is naming a possible suspect in her murder. Al-Qaeda leader Batula Masood was quoted last September in a Pakistani newspaper as saying he would welcome Bhutto's return with suicide bombers. Pakistani officials say he was behind the Karachi bomb blast in October that killed more than 140 people as Bhutto re-entered the country. Portions of Pakistan remain in chaos following Bhutto's murder. Rioting has been deadly and widespread. At least 16 people have been killed. Hundreds of vehicles have been torched. Dozens of buildings have been burned and ransacked. In several locations across the country, paramilitary rangers were given orders to shoot on sight anyone thought to be creating disorder or destruction. Bhutto led the most popular opposition party, widely expected to win the majority of seats in parliament. Nervous world leaders are urging nuclear-armed Pakistan not to postpone elections set for January the 8th. Corruption charges have been brought against Jacob Zuma, elected just last week as leader of the governing African National Congress. The newest charges to be brought against Mr. Zuma also include racketeering and tax evasion. He is currently poised to become South Africa's president after elections in 2009. An Australian man captured while fighting with the Taliban in Afghanistan back in 2001, released from Guantanamo Bay Prison. David Hicks completed his sentence after pleading guilty back in March of this year. He was returned to Australia to serve out his sentence, where he was promptly released today as a closely monitored security risk. The latest defense policy bill from Capitol Hill got a pocket veto from President Bush. Portions of the bill would allow those suing Iraq over the misdeeds of Saddam Hussein to freeze the country's assets while their suits are pending. Mr. Bush says he intends to let the bill die without his signature. Early next month, President Bush will discuss efforts to counter Kurdish rebels with the President of Turkey. President Abdullah Gül will visit the White House for the first time ever on January the 8th, tensions rising over cross-border attacks between rebels of the Kurdistan Workers Party and the Turkish military. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
So what do you look for when you decide where you're going to put all your millions?
Well, I haven't printed up enough to put it in the bank yet, but I guess for convenience and... Pretty much, it's like your grocery market. You get to meet the people there, and you build a little rapport with some of them.
You know, it's a local bank, but it's part of a network of local banks that give you big bank services.
Everything that I need as far as banking is concerned, they have it. Online banking is great for me. So I just like the services that they offer.
You ever taken your dog Cindy to the bank?
As a matter of fact, when I went to open my account, she was with me.
Ah!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a horse come through one of these days. We got a lot of cowboys coming in and out of here, too.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The government equivalent of junk mail cost American taxpayers an estimated $20.3 million last year. That's the amount spent by U.S. House members on nearly 116 million pieces of mail, according to a report by the Associated Press. Investors have been warned Citigroup may be forced to write off as much as $18.7 billion in the fourth quarter, far more than previously expected. Orders for durable goods rose in the U.S. in November for the very first time in 4 months. However, the increase was very small, far more modest than the Commerce Department predicted. Also disappointing analysts, sales of new homes dropped 9% last month. That's a steeper fall than expected. Economists say bankruptcies are expected to rise again next year. Slowing economic growth and an increase in the cost of energy and commodities will have an effect. Analysts from Global Insight say those likely to be hardest hit include electronics manufacturers, agriculture, and energy producers, such as the coal industry. Light sweet crude oil is currently trading at $96 a barrel, gold at $842.70 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 6 points to end at 13,365. The Nasdaq down 2 points at 2674. S&P 500 up 2 at 1478. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, I got one I got to share with you. Let's see if I can work up my Paul Harvey voice here for a second. You might find this interesting. Some of you in the chat room and elsewhere may have already received this, so it won't be news to you. But for those of you who haven't, I don't know, this probably wouldn't pass muster at Snopes, but I like the elegance of it. Many will recall that on July the 8th, 1947, witnesses claimed an unidentified object with five aliens aboard crashed onto a sheep and cattle ranch just outside Roswell, New Mexico. The incident's well known, and just about everybody's heard of it. Many say the incident has long been covered up by the United States Air Force and the federal government. Page 2. In the month of March 1948, exactly 9 months later, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, Condoleezza Rice, and Dan Quayle were all born. That's what happens when aliens breed with sheep. And now you know the rest of the story. God, I wish that was true. Because it is elegant enough to explain a whole lot. Probably not, though. Something of which I would like you to be aware. We have paid attention, of course, to the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. And as I noted last night, if we were not all wrapped up in the affairs of other nations with whom we have no business being wrapped up, it really wouldn't matter that much to us. But it does, because we are. We see acts of terrorism like this abroad, and most of us, because we're normal, think, you know, kind of glad it's not like that here. But it is like that here. It's just that it's a big enough country, this stuff doesn't get noticed nearly so easily, because it's not done on that grand a scale. A family in Iowa that are supporters of Barack Obama woke up Christmas morning to find that all of the presents had been stolen out of their car and out of a garage. In addition, this is in Marshalltown, Iowa, namesake of the famous Marshalltown trowel, one of the best in the business, if it's still made there. In addition, the Obama supporters living on 25th Street in Marshalltown reported a number of racial slurs and derogatory comments spray-painted on their property. The Marshalltown police confirmed the report. Quote, "We found vandalism to the house. When we got there, we found some racial things regarding presidential candidate Barack Obama." The victim was Marie Ortiz. She's volunteered her time in the Obama office in Marshalltown as well as going door-to-door, and has signs supporting Obama in her yard. She has two children, ages 11 and 2. The people who sprayed the Obama slurs also stole their Christmas. Ortiz said, a hate crime is a hate crime. I think it was probably racially motivated. The perpetrator will not be caught. And you may guarantee that the perpetrator is a registered member of the Republican Party. Based both on the use of the N-word in relation to Barack Obama and based on the fact that Marie's last name is Ortiz. But, you know, that's not as nasty as if it was, say, Pakistan. But we do have a problem in this country, and we have a homegrown terrorism problem that problem manifested itself, among other places, in Oklahoma City. It manifested itself in the murder committed by Paul Hill. You remember Paul Hill? He murdered a doctor and also shot the doctor's driver and his wife as well. Frederick Clarkson has an essay at Talk to Action, headlined Domestic Terrorism and the Religious Right. He says, earlier this year, anti-abortion revolutionary theocrats celebrated the 10th anniversary of the crimes committed by Paul Hill. We talked about it on this program. It was done in Wisconsin. The festivities were called Paul Hill Days. The Underground Army of God organization is now hustling a video of the celebration's reenactment of the murders. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Check this out.
Yeah, I'd like to welcome all of you to our Paul Hill reenactment. And when it's over with, I'd be glad to answer any questions that you may have. And sit back and enjoy.
Enjoy. Nice trumpet.
September 29th, 1994, dawned hot and humid. The day promised to be one more brutal, violent day at the Pensacola Ladies Center, a killing center where every day was unspeakably violent. On this day, another 32 innocent children were scheduled for torture and execution. Like so often before, Paul Hood Hill stood there.
Doofus can't even get his hero's name. Paul Hood, Hill. At the execution center.
Peaceful, a beacon of righteousness in a sea of wickedness. It was a day that promised to be like every other day. For innocent children, it would be bloody and violent. But this day was different. Paul Hill stood there with his mind full.
Still can't get it right.
Full of scripture, his heart full of love, his veins flowing with courage.
His heart full of love, his veins flowing with courage, and his shotgun full of buckshot. Don't forget the buckshot.
His hands holding a shotgun, with his Mossberg defender, Paul Hill, had made a choice. He had made a decision. Paul Hill had decided that no babies would die there that day. Meanwhile, two child predators were on their way, predators seeking easy prey. A filthy abortionist and his good-for-nothing bodyguard drew closer and closer. The abortionist's heart was full of greed, his hands full of blood, and his pockets full of money, bribes that he had accepted to slay the innocent. The predators thought it was a day like any other. Easy money, defenseless victim.
You getting this? There's not a... First of all, if you go and look at this thing, and I'm not going to send you to it because I don't want these freaks to have the pleasure of extra views of their video. I'm sorry, I'm just being a jerk. But if you were to go and look at this, you would notice one thing right away. Everybody in this performance zone, if you will, is pasty, white, and male. Not a woman amongst them. And you can't help but wonder why. But wait, let the theater piece continue.
They didn't know that this day was different. This day, the babies had a defender. This day, the babies had a hero.
Yeah. 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 Hallelujah. Yeah, shotgun murder. Hallelujah.
As the child murderers pulled into the healing center, Paul Hill was ready to meet lethal force with force. He fired once. He fired again. And then Paul Hill calmly laid down his shotgun. He raised...
Now, there's the leader of this weird little terrorist cult in an orange T-shirt... mimes, there's a little snare drum with the snare part turned off. That's the sound effect of the bang, the little bang bang. That's not what a shotgun sounds like, of course, but he mimes the shooting done by Paul Hill. Don't worry, it gets more disturbing.
He put his arms in the air and cried out,
"One thing's for sure! No innocent people will be killed in that clinic today."
The Christians are cheering for murder. You heard that? Singing the Hallelujah chorus for murder. You tell me. Somebody tell me, what is the difference between that and the religious fanatics that infect places like Pakistan and Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran and Saudi Arabia and Egypt? What is the difference? Are they less terrifying because they're white? Are they less terrifying because they are supposedly Christian? Are they less terrifying because they speak English? You tell me. You tell me. Scene two. At the Escambia County Courthouse.
Paul Hill's act of love and mercy protected...
Huh? Paul Hill's act of love and mercy? 12-gauge mercy, I guess. Go figure.
32 preborn children from unjust, brutal violence. Paul Hill should have been given a parade.
Yeah.
He should have been given... been honored in our school!
Yeah! Yeah!
Honored from our pulpit!
Yeah!
Honored from our government institution!
Yeah!
Honored with the key to the city!
Yeah!
He should have been welcomed with it as a hero!
That's right! That's right!
Instead, he was arrested and thrown in jail. Paul Hill was put on trial for murder before the dishonorable tyrant, Frank Bell.
Oh.
Paul Hill chose an attorney, but coward Frank Bell said no! But coward Frank Bell said
no!
Paul Hill...
Yeah, that was a redo.
...wanted to present his defense, that he acted to...
hasn't really got the art of reading down yet, does he? It's not like he's working from memory here. He's got the script in his hand. I mean, come on, people.
...defend 32 innocent babies from a brutal murder. But coward Frank Bell said...
No!
Paul Hill wanted the jury to know why he killed the two predators. But coward Frank Bell said...
No! No!
So like his savior, 2,000 years before...
We're going to back up just a hair here so you can hear these Christians equate this murderer in context.
Predators. But coward Frank Bell said...
No!
So like his savior, 2,000 years before, Paul Hill remained mute through a sham trial. But just before the jury decided his fate, Paul Hill broke his silence and boldly proclaimed these words.
You have a responsibility to protect your neighbor's life and to use force if necessary to do so.
Amen.
In an effort to suppress this truth, you may mix my blood with the blood of the unborn and those who have fought to defend the oppressed. However, truth and righteousness will prevail. May God help you to protect the unborn, as you would want to be protected.
Amen.
Right. I wish this was some parody, but these are American terrorists. And just because they don't have a large audience... And just because their trumpet player isn't very good, and just because the guy reading the script is semi-literate, does not make them any less so. They are homegrown, radicalized terrorists who are, what's the line from Macbeth? Trying to screw their courage to the sticking place so that someone they speak to will do the same sort of thing that Paul Hill did, these Christians. And before somebody gets all bent out of shape at me and says, oh, well, you know, and they're not Christians, please provide me with a list of the organizations who have denounced this. Silence is acceptance. We have a terrorism problem in this country. We have a profound terrorism problem in this country. And the terrorism problem that we have in this country goes most frequently under the heading of Christian. Don't blame me for telling you the facts, because facts they are. And these people might be Pentecostal, snake handlers, whatever, but they have their equivalents in every sect and in every denomination of Christianity in the United States. Scene 3, Florida State Prison. I guess that guy's a mime.
As the hour of Paul Hill's execution drew near, the skies grew black, lightning flashed, thunder roared.
Just like when the crucifixion happened.
The prison lights flickered, but Paul Hill walked calmly to the execution chamber. trusting in the finished work of Jesus, Paul Hill spoke to us and encouraged us one final time.
I thank the Lord Jesus Christ for saving me from my sins and enabling me to persevere. I thank the Lord for my loving parents, my loving sisters. I also thank the Lord for giving me an excellent wife and three wonderful children. Two of the last things I'd like to say. If you believe abortion is a lethal force, you should oppose the force and do what you have to do to stop it. May God help you to protect the unborn as you would want to be protected.
Yes. Charming, isn't it? Charming. Let's go to the phones. You quit. Doggone it. But that is the reference that Mr. Clarkson was making in regard to domestic terrorism in the United States. Mr. Clarkson has some quotes. He says, anti-abortion activists like the Reverend Stephen Imbarato of the Catholic Project Defending Life, unaffiliated with the Archdiocese of Santa Fe, New Mexico, as quoted in the Albuquerque Tribune, often blame the victims of terrorism, not the terrorists, thus reinforcing the climate of violence. He told the Tribune that the arsons at the Women's Health Center recently make his mission more difficult. Quote, I was very dismayed because unfortunately pro-lifers get blamed for these things. It makes our lives more difficult and it detracts from our credibility. You have anti-abortion fanatics that get involved in these types of things, but the real violence is perpetrated by the abortionists. Mr. Clarkson says, hear that? Bombings, arsons, and murder are the fault of doctors, nurses, and support staff in medical clinics. Arsons at medical clinics are not crimes so much as a PR headache for the Reverend Imbarato, who, by the way, maintains a chapel right across the street from one of the targeted Planned Parenthood clinics. In the wake of the first arson, the Army of God said this, quote, good news out of Albuquerque. Baby-killing abortion mill is burned. All praise to our Lord Jesus Christ for this wonderful deed. I pray our Lord Jesus Christ keeps the identity of these two saints from being known, and their apprehension will never happen. Since 1977, there have been 7 murders, 17 attempted murders, 41 bombings, 100 butyric acid attacks, 656 anthrax threats, and 175 arsons, including the most recent incident in New Mexico. Those numbers don't include the 2 Christmas attacks. Now, who's better than Pakistan? Why are there suicide bombings in Iraq? The same crowd that wants to blow up and bomb abortion clinics and kill doctors and nurses and support staff are the ones who joyously advanced the idea of attacking Iraq because Saddam is an evil man who kills his own people. Frederick Clarkson closes his remarks with, hello, America. Hello, America, indeed. We'll try the phones again. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Jim, what's up?
I'm just listening to your theater piece there.
Well, not mine, the Army of Gods, but yeah.
Whatever. You know, this is what I can say about that. As much as I disagree with this horse shit, and that's what it is, it's horse shit. These people, however misguided as they are, they do have the right to say what they say, just as you have the right to play what they're playing. That's all you can say. This is America.
Well, that's not, it's
and
not
they
necessary.
Have the right to do what
Jim, that's
to.
not entirely true, because First Amendment law in this country is abundantly clear that you do not have the right under the First Amendment to yell fire in a crowded theater. You do not have the right to incite people to open acts of violence,
well,
which is what these people are doing.
Now.
No, I'm talking about the First Amendment.
Well, I don't know. I don't have my Constitution in front of me, and I can't read it verbatim, and I'm just not going to say anything more about the First Amendment, but I will tell you a story, and you might find it somewhat interesting. My late father, God bless him, was mayor of my town for 30 years. And in the 50s, we used to have crosses burned in front of our house. But yet, when the Klan wanted to have a parade, he went to write for them to have that parade because he said everybody's got a right to have a parade as long as they do so peaceful and honorably and within the balance of the law.
Okay. And that's a correct interpretation.
Absolutely. And these people, like I say, let them talk. Let them talk. When they stop talking, then that's when they start doing other things. You know what I'm saying?
I do understand that completely, Jim. However, I would note that when their hate speech leads to violence on the part of the, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to radicalize other people into becoming new Paul Hills.
Oh, I know they are, but I mean, they're probably, if they were listening to your broadcast tonight, what do you think they'd be saying? Think about it.
Oh, I think they'd be trying to figure out where I live.
Well, I think they would probably, if they weren't trying to come to where you live, they were probably thinking, well, look at this guy. He's saying all this inflammatory, hateful stuff about us. You know what I'm saying?
No, but it's not the same thing, Jim. I'm not encouraging anybody to blow these people away.
No, I'm not saying you are, but these people are...
They are domestic terrorists.
Well, if that's your interpretation, that's fine. I would certainly agree with them more if they would spend just the same amount of time on rearing that child after it came out of its mother's womb and taking care of it. You know?
But you know how it is with these people. After you're born, you're on your own.
Well, that's true. They don't provide anybody any support system. I won't ever forget one time when I challenged one of these people at one of their gatherings in which they were trumpeting the very same thing this guy was doing. He said different words, you know, take the same idea, put different words on it. And I said, ma'am, I said, I'm going to ask you a question. And I said, instead of being out here marching around and carrying on and, you know, making a spectacle of yourself, why aren't you taking care of some child that needs your help, straightening its teeth, seeing that it gets a proper education, so it doesn't end up a war of the state as either a mental patient or a prisoner or a murderer or whatever? I said, can you not answer me that question, please?
And, of course, you got no answer.
No answer whatsoever. I mean, she told her to kiss her ass.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I said, you know, that's great. That's eloquent. I said, you know, it looks too much like your face, I guess. I don't know what I said. I just looked at her and I said, that's the answer I expected to hear. But I said, you know, if you really believe in something, and I respect your right to believe in it, then for God's sakes, if you truly care about life, then not only care about its inception, its conception, but also its prosecution through its stages until it dies. Or until it's able to become a productive member of society.
Well, that's an interesting... But let's back up for a second, Jim, because that's an interesting point you raise. Are we obliged to respect these people's position?
Well, I don't see any reason. Well, I have to respect their position because if somebody disagrees with me, I'm not going to disrespect him because I disagree with him. I don't have to agree with him. but I'm not going to give him the pleasure of letting it know that it causes me problems. I mean, you know, if that's what they feel, that's the way they feel. I mean, I have talked to a number of people like this and have tried to, you know, use sweet reason and tried to say, look, you know, if you believe in life so much, I think that's wonderful. However, let's carry it beyond the stage of just birth and the things we just discussed earlier.
So these people are encouraging open acts of life-threatening violence, and we have to respect their position?
Well, I would think, I'll put it this way. As long as they talk and as long as it doesn't happen, what are you going to do about it? You're going to stifle their right to talk? No, you can't do that. You know that, and I know it.
No, but the thing is, when it comes to the open advocacy of violence, yes, they can be shut down.
Well, I mean, you know, they're now, but conversely, they're calling what is going on inside these clinics murder. You know what I'm saying?
And they use that as a means of justifying their own. But if it wasn't that, it would be another issue.
Well, each side does that, Bob. That's my point.
No, each side does. That's my point, Jim. Each side doesn't. The pro-choice people aren't running around calling for people to take shotguns and go blow these Army of God freaks away. It's not equivalent.
Well, they do have instances which they have had. I think they have had some problems with that, haven't they? In which people have come to blows with one group or the other.
Oh, there have been fisticuffs, but there are no websites out there saying women go and murder the Army of God. There are, however, an abundance of websites that encourage people to do violence against men and women working in these women's reproductive health clinics.
I say, well, all I can say is that, you know...
Bernard Slepian was shot through his kitchen window.
Who was he?
He was a physician.
Okay.
Who was murdered by another one of these homegrown terrorists?
So he was okay.
And these people vote devotedly Republican.
Well, whatever. But that being however they vote, is a non-issue as far as I'm concerned. I'm talking about the act of murder itself. I mean, when talk ends and murder begins.
But Jim, the point is that they vote. And they shoot their convictions. And the groups with which they align themselves do not adequately disavow their actions.
Well, I vote my convictions, and I've certainly shot my convictions in my time, you know? Except in a different situation.
You were doing so under government sanction.
No, well, I had to do what I was told to do.
Right. No
anyway,
one. This is and that's the difference between, say, a military setting versus a homegrown terrorist setting. These people are taking it upon. They are using terror as an instrument of changing public policy, and that is a working definition of terrorism.
Well, I will say this: it is given what you say being true, I would assume that it has not without effect. Correct. And what would you do to stop these people? How would you contain them? How would you ameliorate or solve this problem?
Well, for starters, this kind of incitement should be taken seriously and prosecuted because it is illegal. It is not covered by the First Amendment, Jim.
Well, they have taken a number of these people into custody. I mean, they had one guy who was,
consider Eric, this guy,
a deranged priest or something like that, who shot somebody and he went in for manslaughter.
Consider Eric Rudolph. I believe that's the guy's name. He was the Atlanta Olympic Park bomber. And he also bombed an abortion clinic in Birmingham, Alabama. The Bush administration, he was finally caught, and the Bush administration, and this has nothing to do with whether or not I support the death penalty, I don't, but the Bush administration, which has never been hesitant in using the most stern of and terminal punishments, for far lesser offenses, refused to seek the death penalty. The man is now doing life in a federal prison, and he sits in his prison cell and gets messages out to his followers by which he taunts his victims to this day, Jim.
You mean he's in a federal correctional facility and he's allowed to message people outside?
He messages the outside world and they communicate his taunts to his victims and his victims' families.
So he has a laptop in his.
It can be as simple as snail mail.
Well, I guess.
They gladly carry his water.
Well, I mean, you know, that happens in a lot of prisons. I mean, you know, good Lord, Lucky Luciano ran the damn mafia from Sing Sing until they finally laid it out.
But the point that I'm trying to reach, Jim, is that these people are no different than they're no different than the Taliban. They're no different than Al Qaeda. They use the same tactics. They certainly clothe themselves in the same theology.
Well, that may be true, and they're terribly misguided people, and what really irritates me is that everything they say that they do in the name of Christ, which is not true. But it's a terrible misusage of the term.
But you probably heard the audio right there where he said, just like our Savior 2,000 years ago.
Well, I mean, you know... Even Christ said that people would do this when he walked this earth, and they would say things in his name that weren't true. And he said that, and he even predicted how he would be misquoted and his followers would be misquoted and used for ill advantage.
And that's the road we're traveling down. And we have, and you know, my whole point is that we have no right, Jim, to sit here and act like we are somehow above it all. Above places like Baghdad, the hell that we've created there, or the hell that we've helped create in Pakistan by virtue of the policies we have pursued for the last 7 years.
Well, our policies have been flawed, and I think they will eventually be seen for what they are. They already have been seen for what they are. I mean, people have already regretted our going into Baghdad, and they certainly are very much afraid of what could happen in Pakistan tonight if the wrong military person happens to get a hold of the wrong type of ordnance, which they have.
Indeed.
You know, obviously. And I don't know. I hope that things will get better. That's all I can say. And I hope that at the end of the Bush administration, things will begin to improve. But I don't foresee those being kicked out or being impeached. They're going to leave, and they're going to go home, and just as they, so many other bad rulers in history had before, they will be allowed to go home and do that, and others will have to come back and clean up the carnage, and clean up their mess. Unfortunately, that's just the way it's turned out.
And it's a sad situation.
What's even more unfortunate is you'll still have more people still believing that what they did was right till the day they die. Why, I can't tell you. It's the nature of the human animal. It's just the way people are. Some people feel this way, some people feel that way, and it's horrible. And it's not really acceptable to me, and it's certainly regrettable. But
the other side is that as long as this continues, there will be more Paul Hills, there will be more Eric Rudolphs, there will be more of these bombings, more of these killings. Something as seemingly innocuous, but not innocuous at all, as spray painting someone who supports Barack Obama with N Lover on the side of their house.
Well, you know, you're going to have that kind of stuff, and you know that. That's just.
Yeah, you're gonna. You're going to have it, but why do we tolerate it? Why do we pretend that the other side is somehow worthy of civilized debate over it?
Well, you know, I'm no scholar of the law. You may be. I'm not. However, why do we tolerate the existence of the skinheads? Why do we tolerate the existence of these camps where they go and and train these people in these paramilitary fashions to do all kinds of things. And they have pictures of Adolf Hitler and swastikas and all kinds of stuff like that. And why do we tolerate the neo-Nazis? Why will the ACLU defend people like this or the Klan? I don't know. You tell me. It's a free country. They have a right to assemble. And as long as they do so nonviolently, there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, Jim, I wish you the very best new year and a safe one as well.
Same to you, sir.
You have a good weekend.
All right. Sir.
Bye.
Good night.
Let's see. Onward and hoping that this... yes, you're still there. Welcome to the program.
Is it me? I can't tell if I'm on or not.
Yeah, it's you.
It's Michelle.
Hey, Michelle.
Here in California. I saw that Gunny Bob was waiting, too. He goes, where's the front porch? I want to talk to Jim. And I'm like, well, I want to talk to Jim, too. So hopefully Jim's still listening. Because, I mean, when we talk about, you know, people's right to assemble and people's right to protest, and what you were saying, Bob, is exactly it. You know, it's like, you know, and you can do these things, but you cannot incite people to take violence upon others. Now, when you see the KKK and being defended by the ACLU, their right to have a march that says, you know, they're the KKK, you know, and that this is their, they believe their rights are being stomped on. Yeah, that's right. But they can't go out there and hold up signs and saying death to black people, death to the Jews. You know, that's what they used to do, you know, that, and they can't do that. And if you noticed, it was a lot of times I feel like our government goes after who they want to. I mean, they'll go after the radical, you know, abortion clinic stalkers. But then again, they in some situations they won't. I mean, it seems like in Florida you see a lot more of this, you know. They like that upheaval. They like keeping the fear going. And I don't understand that so much, that, you know, sometimes the law will apply and sometimes it doesn't. And do you see that?
The First Amendment issues, Michelle, are very, very delicate things. And it's a body of law that has developed over time. The most significant body of it happening in the World War I years and following. And that's where you begin to see Justice Holmes saying things like you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Later on, other lines of thought developed that said that the remedy to bad speech is not to suppress that speech. The remedy to bad speech is more speech, which says that, you know, and that's founded on the idea of the marketplace of ideas, that ideas must compete, and the better idea, the idea that society sees to be the more viable and valuable will win out by virtue of its own merit. But there's also, you know, the law says that the state, and by the state I mean, you know, in any, whether it's a municipality, a state, a nation, whatever, may proscribe speech within what is referred to as reasonable times, places, and manners. In other words, you know, things like parade permits, you know, you can't have a march down a residential street at 3 o'clock in the morning with horns blaring and loudspeakers going. Political speech, the single most protected speech in America, has limitations put on it. You can't put loudspeakers on a truck and drive through a neighborhood at 4 in the morning blaring, you know, Bill Doberman will bring freedom to the county. You can't do that.
I like the name, by the way.
I stole it. It's a Dave Barry. Dave Barry. Bill, yeah. Doberman. But, I mean, do you see what I'm saying? And when it comes to openly inciting violence, and that's what these people are doing,
right?
the government is more than is and should be more than justified in not letting it go down. Now, I believe in free speech. I believe in it vigorously, and I come down on what could be deemed the wrong side of it more times than not.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if we're going to walk around this country being absolutely terrified at the prospect of terrorism, let's at least know who the damn terrorists are. It's not some sleeper cell of disaffected Muslims in Flint, Michigan. It's these people, white folks, usually male, almost exclusively male, who are screaming for somebody to get out there and blow away somebody so they can have another Paul Hill day. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, and I guess my question is, and this comes up being that I'm of the feminine persuasion, my biggest question to the males is how would you position yourself in life if you had every corner you turned, you had to deal with something limiting you on the basis of your sexual identification, your biological identification. And meaning, okay, you can't jack off, okay? I'm sorry, you can't do that. That's against the law. You're killing the prospect of a child.
Yeah, oh yeah, and I mean, look.
But see, this is what really gets me when, you know, you're talking about the terrorists. What really gets me is the logic behind it. You know, it's this simplistic logic. Oh, it's common sense. I love it when people say it's common sense. It's not common sense.
Incident for incident, Michelle, there have been more terrorist acts perpetrated on American soil by American Christians than by any other single group. I know some people get kind of upset with me when I talk in those terms, but it is a fact. It just is. And you know what? By in some ways, the Reverend Fred Phelps is more honest about it than others, because people like this group that did this little Paul Hill Days thing in Wisconsin last summer, they aren't really socially acceptable. That was their weird little sect that was sitting on the lawn watching them do it, and it's not like, you know, anybody turned out to see it. But the thing is, they talk their talk and they walk their walk, and they're dangerous. They are snakes, and you know when you reach down to pick it up that it is a poisonous snake. It's groups like the Southern Baptist Convention, and this offshoot brand of Presbyterianism that has been infected by American fundamentalism, that sit there well-dressed in their polyester pantsuits on Sunday and their polyester three-piece vested suits and whatnot, and they quietly, we must do something about the Holocaust of abortion. There was the Reverend Mike Huckabee declaring that we wouldn't need illegal immigrants to pick our lettuce if only Roe versus Wade hadn't been made law in 1973. We could have an army of 30 million poorly paid farm workers who were white and black and American, and they could be picking our lettuce instead.
That's right.
You know, and those, and the thing is,
common sense.
But the thing is, they don't look like poisonous snakes when you reach down to pick them up, Michelle. Why, they look like fluffy little bunnies who follow Jesus. And they turn out to be about 50 times as deadly. You know what I'm saying?
I know. It's kind of like I had a history teacher in college that said, you know, the whole thing about the rights of speech, and the reason why we want the people like the KKK and others to be able to speak their word is because we want to know about them.
Yeah,
we go underground, you know.
Yeah.
And then you don't know what.
Yeah, it's like that old saying that sunlight is the best disinfectant of all.
To analyze this whole, you know, it's hard to get into that. It's hard to get into that understanding where these people are coming from. The only way I can rationalize it is that they come from fear. It's all fear.
Sure it is. Well, no. It's fear and it's hate. Hate doesn't always need a motivator. Sometimes people are just hateful. They've been raised to hate people of different skin colors. They've been raised to hate people of different nationalities. And in the case of these abortion people, like I said, it's almost always doughy, pasty-faced, middle-aged white guys. And they, they don't love the babies. They have no interest in the babies.
Right. Right.
What they hate, Michelle, and I can't get my, I don't get it. They hate women. They are afraid of women. I imagine if you did a psychological study, you'd find that any time they have a relationship with a woman, the woman has to be submissive, subservient, and deemed less intelligent than them.
But hate, if you're talking on psychological matters, if you look at hate is a subcategory of an emotion. I mean, hate isn't usually direct. It's the byproduct of the emotion. And I when you say people are just, you know, they grow up and are taught to hate, but aren't they taught to hate because they fear what they don't understand? I mean, it's the lack of knowledge. It's the lack of experience.
Psychological, but most of these people, Michelle, don't have that kind of depth, okay? They're taught that they're doing this because God wants them to, because God wants to protect the little children. But the motivation underneath it is hate and fear.
See, and see, you sound just like my husband and some other people I know. And I disagree. I do believe they have the ability to have depth. But I think that, you know, when we're surrounded and inundated by this simple-minded, you know, TV and entertainment and these drama quests that they have every day on the news and then on the reality TV or whatever, it just keeps them from working on that. And then it gets to a point that they fear that depth because it's going to take a lot of work to get to there. You know, it's like the person that, you know, wants to go to school, but they don't because, well, I might just not make it. I might fail. Well, you know, really, if we were a great society, there'd be that catch-all back there that person that would step up and say, you know what, that if you just look at who you are, you can move on. I mean, isn't that what is missing in our society? And it's all rooted in this, you know, the wild, wild west kind of mentality. I mean, I hate to go that in depth, especially, what is it, 5 o'clock? It's time for a break, isn't it?
We are kind of on top of it, but no, I mean, yeah. I hate to break in. I don't know. I understand your point. I hope you do mine.
I do.
In that,
I just can't give up on it.
Well, I'm not giving up, but I for heaven's sakes, we, you know, especially when we're sitting here wringing our hands about what happened in Pakistan.
Right.
For us to pretend that we aren't growing our own literally by the orchard full. Is simple-minded, but no one save programs like this and a few others, programs on the Horn and a few others elsewhere, nobody will talk about this in the terms in which it has to be discussed. And that is that we are growing our own, and the people tending the orchards are tax-exempt, and they call themselves religion. there aren't any atheists in the anti-abortion movement, okay?
Right, right.
And it's not because atheists hate little babies. It's because atheists have a pretty good handle on minding their own doggone business.
Yeah. Well, and you're not taught, I mean, you don't become, a Unitarian, or you don't go to the Unitarian Church because of fear that when you die that you won't get to go to the cushy little white...
I've never met a fundamentalist Unitarian, you know? It's like that old gag about when you find out there are Unitarians in your neighborhood. Do you know how you get it? You know how you run them out of the neighborhood? You burn a question mark in their yard.
I gotta tell that to my sister who's the Unitarian.
that's wicked, and I shouldn't. That's got all kinds of awful connotations. But
I told you the joke my Jewish allergist doctor told me. The biggest dilemma for a Jewish person is going to the grocery store and it says ham on sale today.
Oh, I think Tennessee's basketball coach Bruce Pearl used that as he said, "Yeah, my biggest dilemma, free bacon." But no, I mean it's we make these little jokes and they're not intended as derogatory, but
no.
But when we talk about when we talk about things like terrorism, and when we talk about things like sleeper cells in America, I always turn, Michelle, and I think far more about the quiet people sitting in church pews singing hymns who either intentionally or enable this stuff. And my favorite example is to note that no Baptist organization in this country has ever withdrawn the ordination of Fred Phelps.
Really?
Really. He remains, he remains an ordained Baptist minister. Okay.
Well, I saw the documentary on
the 30 day Pope, John Paul I, who was an amazing man and may very well have been murdered for the positions that he had hoped to bring to the Roman Catholic Church, led an active attempt to see the excommunication of Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini, both of whom went to their deaths good Catholics. He was absolutely and roundly excoriated for it by the conservative leadership within the church.
I didn't know that. I didn't know about Fred Phelps. I mean,
and by silence they are accepted. And I mean, I've got more audio here that I'm going to run after the news, that continues this, because it isn't going away, Michelle.
Yeah, and we got to quit living like glass house,
And because we continue to say, well, they've got a right to their opinions, we ensure the slaughter of another nurse, another doctor, the bombing of another clinic, the killing of an innocent bystander. We assure every bit of that, Michelle, because we will not talk about it in upright, straightforward, forthright terms. We will not call the silent people on their acceptance by silence.
Hey, you're right. Well, hey, I'm going to let you do the news.
I think I'll go do the news, Michelle.
And I'm glad to hear you got what you're supposed to get. I hope you got a few bites of it.
I did. It was a lovely gift basket. Come on. I had to fight for it. Trust me.
Well, I sent it more for the kids.
Oh, I know, but and they had a but you know they sent it for the kids. Come on, the full strength caffeinated flavored coffee in there. Everybody likes Agnes better than me, and I know it. Okay, let's not. You don't have to soft soap it, Michelle. I understand.
It's that smile. I mean, you know.
Well, I tell you, wait a minute. Let's, I tell you what, the heck with the news. Hang on here. Let's see if I can make this happen. Let's get some front porch going. Hey, who have I got?
Hello.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. There's Michelle.
Hello.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing, darling?
How are doing good.
How are those peaches out there in California?
Ah, peaches. How about oranges?
Oh, no, peaches. I'm not talking about peaches, girl. I canned peaches. I'm talking about them sandy beaches.
Beaches.
Oh. Well, they're polluted.
I'm sorry. God, it's good to talk to you. You know, hey, Nan was saying, hang on, Bob. She's coming. She'll be there. Hey, I have been wanting to talk to the gal from Cal for a long time.
Well, let's see if we can get the whole porch thing going. Well, now let's keep it going. I think I've got some technical difficulties that keep me from bringing too many more people on. So whoever's on hold, just hold, and we'll do two more here in a minute.
There you go.
All right. Well, hey, Michelle, you do so much, and you speak from your heart. And not from some intellectual pinnacle of knowledge that you have, think you have, but you don't have, you know what I mean? You know what I just said?
I can barely hear.
Yeah, Bob, I've got a terrible connection here for some. I've got you jacked up as far as the machine will go, and I can barely hear you myself.
Okay, well, let me switch over here. I'll grab a landline. I mean, I'm talking on one of them, landless? Okay, just a moment. See if this works better. Hello?
Yeah, that's considerably better.
That's good.
Well, I had one of them cordless ones. I'm sorry, dear. I really am. But, you know, like I said, you know, you speak from the pinnacle of your heart, not from some ivory tower that you built for yourself that you think you know what you think you know. You speak the truth, girl, and that's what I love about you.
Well, same here, Bob. I, you know, when you call, I know that you have passion in your heart, and that that's why I love you guys, all of you guys. I mean, it's like your family. You know how it's like when you're sitting in an airport or you're sitting in a train station, somebody, you know, you could just sit and talk, and you know the time is right. You want to talk to them. That's what I love about this radio station and this network, because the fact is that I never have to worry about never seeing you at the train station again or in the airport. I always get to hear from you guys and be Bob and Agnes and Head On Radio.
The funny thing is, we have something going here. We have it's like a first connect. You know, like you're talking about people in a airport or a train station, but we have something a whole lot different than that. We have people disconnected, but yet they are connected. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We are connected because we have not only common sense, but we have common decency. We have that in our hearts. We care about our neighbors. We care about this Head-On Radio Network. We care about people in Australia. We care about people across the globe. We care. We don't think just about ourselves. And that's what's beautiful about this thing. It's a start. Something new. Something beautiful. It is a beginning. This is not the end of it. This is just the start. If we hold that and stand up for it and just fight for it, like Bob. Bob does every night. And Bob Kincaid, good God, you know how much I love you. And everybody on this head-on network. I really care. But I can't go out there on the streets and bang the pots and pans together to try to get, They called it, Reagan called it something, the silent majority?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the silent. No, we're not silent. We're not, Bob. We are the majority. They are keeping us silent by not allowing us to speak with one another. But here on the Head On Network, we have a chance to start something. It's not the end. It's not even the beginning of the end. It is just the beginning. We just started something, three, four, five years ago? We just started it. And by God, hey, Michelle, you're part of it. You're part of the beginning of the start of the beginning of the end. The end of the Republican Party and the beginning of something better than the Democrat Party. Or the Democratic Party.
So, right?
Yeah.
Well, isn't it kind of like when you were talking about, you know, your position that you can't go out in the streets, but I mean, the fact is that we all need, I mean, I need you all support for when I do go out in the street, because I'm not going to get it. I sure as heck don't get it when I donate my time to the Democratic Party. But I think it's still good to take advantage of that organization to get out the information, that needs to be. I'll never forget, I was helping the nurses union and the workers union, but they refused to let me carry my Planned Parenthood, you know, because the state of California was trying to mandate that, you know, this right to know, Parents' Right to Know Act. And they wanted to deny my brochures, you know, on information about this act. And I told them, I said, I can't believe you won't fight for my rights, but yet you asked me to fight for your... Mind you guys, I still delivered them. So, I mean, we utilize the system. But the radical that Bob was talking about, that radicalness, the terrorism of other individuals, the terrorism of the African-American community, the terrorism of the women in our communities, the terrorism of our elderly, these things happen. And I say that's corporate terrorism on our elderly, like in the elderly care. Call that terrorism.
Michelle, it is this. It is the terrorism that you allow them to inflict on you and to inflict on us. We have to stop the terror in ourselves first. Don't be afraid. I think it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt that told us, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. We don't.
And that's been replaced, Bob, by we have nothing but fear.
Okay.
That's right.
So let's be honest.
I'm surprised that wasn't the Bush administration's Bush campaign's campaign slogan for 2004. Bush Cheney, 2004, we have nothing but fear.
Yeah, well, they don't, because we have allowed them to instill their fear in us.
You remember, I know it seems like ancient history now, but do you remember when Dick Cheney told America that if we elected John Kerry, we would be hit by terrorists within days?
Bob, we have allowed Dick Cheney and Georgie, little Georgie Porgy, sitting there on the front porch of the White House to tell us that we're supposed to be afraid because we're going to be hit by something else. No, we've been hit by an economic crunch that's coming down real hard on this country and real soon. And if people don't realize it, then, you know, it's their problem. It's, you know, we have to just understand this, Bob, that they, those that tell us we have nothing to fear, except when we're going to get hit by the next, Osama bin Laden, that they will materialize before our eyes somewhere in Southern California or in New Jersey or in Newark, Connecticut, or someplace else. But they're going to come up with another boogeyman, Bob. They're going to come up with another one.
That's why the business with, and I didn't spend too much time on it, Bob, because Malloy did such a good job with it last night. But this business of what Benazir Bhutto said in the interview with David Frost was so telling, because everybody said, oh, well, you know, she said the man who murdered Osama bin Laden. You know, she didn't mean that. That was just a slip of the tongue. This woman is a professional speaker, okay? She is measured in the words that she uses in any public appearance. And David Frost didn't bat an eyelash at it, and Benazir Bhutto didn't say, oh, I'm sorry, I meant the man who murdered blah, blah. And what is telling about that is before she even said that, she mentioned among the people who would like to kill her, Hamza bin Laden. She didn't say Osama bin Laden. She said, and very specifically, Hamza bin Laden, the son of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She had two opportunities to refer to Osama bin Laden as a living human being.
Yeah.
And on both occasions, she refrained from doing so. So, yeah, there'll always be a boogeyman. But frankly, I fully expect. I guess I haven't seen one in a while, because at this point it's just a little bit ridiculous. But 10-15 years ago, every couple of weeks you'd be going through the grocery store line and you'd see some doctored up photo on the cover of the Inquirer or the Star or whatever, Hitler alive in Bolivia. And they'd show Elvis Schmelvis, okay? Hitler alive in Bolivia, and they'd show some doctored up photo of a guy with a Charlie Chaplin mustache. Because he was the boogeyman, okay?
Exactly.
My high school German teacher was a born German, and she was born in the years following World War II. And at that point in time, she told us that they were told as children growing up in southern Germany, come in by dark or Hitler will get you.
Okay.
Okay? Because he had been made a boogeyman. Now, Osama bin Laden apparently is due to release another tape.
Oh, gosh.
He's releasing tapes more quickly than Boston did its second album at this point. But he's probably dead.
I know, but Bob.
But they're going to continue to flog him as a boogeyman. You see what I'm saying?
Will it be as good as Fahrenheit 9/11? I mean, no. Hey, come on, think about it. Will it be as good as Fahrenheit 9/11? Okay? I mean, at least that guy could make a movie.
These people are operating out of George Orwell's 1984 and using it as a textbook, okay?
I know that, Bob, and everybody that listens.
That's Osama bin Laden is the evil Goldstein, Goldstein who was the bad guy in 1984.
Right, but he was also one of the guys that helped.
It's like the V for Vendetta, you know, the more. That would be a great way of really referencing today.
Hey guys, let me bring a couple more lines on.
Can get somebody else on.
Bob, you take care, and a happy new year to you both, all right?
Happy new year to you. Hey, bye-bye.
Save the earth and peace and goodwill to all. And, hey, happy day.
All right, take care, Bob. Bye. Now, let's see if we've got a person. Okay, we got a person there. And we got a person there. Okay.
We sure do.
Okay, who've I got where?
You got
Richard in near San Francisco.
Okay, I got Richard, and I got
Steady in Christmas Valley, Oregon.
Well, hey Steady, hey Richard, how y'all both doing?
Hi Steady.
Hi Richard, I'm doing fine. And yourself?
I am cold as hell. It is freezing here.
What passes for freezing in the Bay Area, Richard? I can't wait to hear this.
Believe it or not, my bones are chilled. It's 46 degrees outside, but we've been out down to 28 this week.
Oh, wow, that is brutal for you guys.
Yeah, and when it gets down to 28 here, for a little too long, people's pipes freeze because, you know, I'm an Easterner, so I know what to do.
They don't.
They don't. Yeah, the natives don't.
It's like Susan talking last night about people trying to drive in snow in Portland.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's actually snowed in San Francisco since I've been here.
Yeah, I was a little bit skeptical, Richard, because I remember seeing a newspaper headline from years ago when there was a summer heat wave in the Bay Area, and the newspaper article said 70 degrees again today, no relief in sight.
Oh, no way. I mean, it's been 106 in Oakland.
Well, that was some time back, but it's...
Yeah. No, I mean, I've experienced 106 in Oakland. It's horrible. I don't like heat. I prefer cold.
But you just said you were freezing. Pick a side and stay on it, Richard.
Well, I think I've gotten used to it. But there's something, I don't know, there's something in the air. It feels really, really cold.
Well, it's wet cold. I remember my father moved from the mountains here down to Alabama, which where we were sits hard on the banks of the Tennessee River. He swore it was colder there than he had ever been in his life up here.
Yeah, that's right. Mark Twain is reputed to have said that the coldest day he ever spent was summer in San Francisco.
He did, in fact, say that. So, Steady, are you freezing in Christmas Valley?
Well, I just came back down from Green Mountain, was cutting some firewood while it was snowing, and I think we got about 28 degrees. So I've got some wood in the firebox, and I'm not cold anymore. But I called because I came down from the mountain, man, and I got a ticket, my first ticket in Oregon. I didn't have lights on my trailer, and I was driving somebody else's car that wasn't registered, so now I've got to head to Lakeview and involve myself in the county. With a ticket. Yeah, that's unfortunate. But I wanted to emphasize what Benny Bob was saying, and that we care. And a quote from Eisenhower that Tom Hartman actually uses frequently, and when he said the end of the Republican Party, he says if any political party would ever attempt to abolish farm programs, Social Security, unemployment, you'd not hear that political party in our political history. But there is a small splinter group that believes they can do these things. Among them are a few Texas oil millionaires.
Yeah, yeah.
The occasional businessman from other areas. Their numbers are negligible and they're stupid. So I thought I'd share that one, segue from Goody Bob.
Yeah, there's a line in that quote, the line in that quote, and it's from a letter from Eisenhower to his niece or nephew or cousin or something, where he said that any political party that tried to eliminate Social Security would cease to be a national party almost overnight or something like that.
Oh,
and,
goody.
And it's come to pass, but the thing is, oddly enough, it's gaining traction. I mean, one of the things that that George Bush was unable to do that apparently Ron Paul has succeeded with a lot of people is one of the mantras that these Paul cultists, and they really are, guys, these cultists repeat is Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. And there will be no Social Security for the 20-something generation. And on, and we have to allow younger workers to find a better way to provide for their retirement. And you know, George Bush tried that. Remember when he said he was going to spend his I got some political capital now, and I'm about to spend it. Remember that?
That was
January 2005 when he tried to piratize Social Security?
Yes,
I sure do.
Well, you know, that it went over like a turd in a punch bowl, and everybody thought it was gone. Well, now it's been resurrected. You know, this radical outsider, this man who's not cut from the same Republican cloth, is out there preaching mainline Republican doctrine, and he's even got some liberals and progressives out there who are going, dang, He's the man. And I'm just sitting here, you know, sitting here scratching my head going, what the hell?
What's the plan?
Well, his, you know, he's a hardcore libertarian. Social Security shouldn't exist at all.
Who is this person?
Ron Paul?
Oh, okay, Ron Paul, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, just real crazy.
Well, Bob, I'm a registered Democrat and ran. Actually, today, 28th December, is the day that the filing period for Congress opens in California. It was 2 years ago when I, or whatever, that's when that, 2006. But I gotta tell you, the Social Security program, I mean, it needs to be revamped. The back and forth between the Democrats, Ron Paul, I have to look a little bit more into him, but I'd like to see a bull move with Ron Paul and Kucinich, the what would you call them, on deck hitters, or not on site, but.
But Steady, that'd be like having mandatory nightly Star Trek reference. That would be like mixing your matter and your antimatter.
Well, I have to. Well,
because everything that Dennis Kucinich believes in is directly and supports is directly contrary to everything that Ron Paul supports, with the single exception of ending the war. And Ron Paul wants to end the war for all. Ending the war is a good thing any way you slice it, but if it's possible to be right for the wrong reasons, Ron Paul is.
Closely with Darren Russo in America, Freedom to Fascism, and my opponent in California, Henry Nicole, is actively involved in his campaign. And just for full disclosure, I was raised in Orange County, and I was a registered Republican from 1984 until I joined the military, where I became completely disenfranchised. And then I went libertarian. And then after 9/11, I registered as a Democrat. But really, I guess I'll sum it all up by saying my background is to take care of your people, the general welfare, and how do we take care of the next generation and leave something better for them than we have today, and it just doesn't look like it's going that way. I beseech everybody out there to register to vote and get out there and express yourself, become part of the body politic.
Absolutely.
And
Steady,
on the radio network.
I don't know if you were, the 2000 election seems like ancient history now, but I remember when Al Gore tried to talk about a lockbox and all the sneering political pundits just chuckled at that. Oh, isn't that cute? He wants a lockbox. But what Al Gore was saying is, look, Bill Clinton is leaving office. We have a monumental budget surplus. Let's take that budget surplus. Let's create legislation, a lockbox, if you will, that will keep Congress's hands off of it, and let us stabilize Social Security forevermore and end this debate. And George Bush on the other side said, no, we can't do that. We got to take the surplus and use it. We got to give it back to the people. We need some tax cuts. Tax cuts will stimulate the economy. And by March of 2001, we had started into recession because of Bush's tax cuts for his buddies.
Yeah,
we can't. Any problem with Social Security can be solved. It is not an insoluble problem. It has been made a problem largely because it's worth remembering, I always emphasize this, when Social Security was passed by the Congress, it passed without a single Republican vote. And from that time to this, the Republicans then told their sons, and their sons told the grandsons, and the grandsons have told the great-grandsons, someday we'll kill it. And that remains their goal, because it is an effective program. Just like the Ron Paul people say, well, we can't have universal health care because that's highly inefficient. The profit motive will make sure that the corporate world will and the free market will deliver the best health care available. Which is, of course, BS, because we've had free market health care. It ain't working. And Medicare.
Well, I use a public health system.
Yeah.
and I'm very partial to it.
Yeah, Medicare has proven to be the single most efficiently the single most efficient healthcare delivery service in this country.
It is very efficient. I just got on it, by the way.
Something like 1%. It operates. It's got a 1% overhead. 1% of the monies that go in actually make the program go. There's not an insurance company in the United States that can claim that. Anything from 15% to 45% of monies in go to support the bloated salaries and Christmas bonuses of their executive structure.
Yeah, I think so. And as a matter of fact, I think that everybody who was considering a health plan should immediately, the first question they should ask is, what's the salary of the CEO?
What? Yeah, one step further, Richard, ask what his Christmas bonus was last year.
Fine, that's fine. Yeah.
Because Christmas bonuses for health insurance and insurance company CEOs in general are measured in the millions of dollars.
See, what I'm looking at is, being a county health commissioner, I see reports about the money. You know, I see the flow of the money to some degree. It's very hard to take it in because it's so complicated. Even though my county's health system is public, I mean, we have our own HMO, which I've mentioned before. Even though it's public, it has to interface with the private insurance industry. And in order to interface with the private insurance industry, it has to share software with that world. And these structures, stuff
there goes
like
the ballgame.
Well, not necessarily, because it gives me something to criticize. Because I had to go to the hospital recently, and I saw what the hospital wrote the bill up for. And then I saw what they accepted from Social Security. And it just blew the top of my head off. I mean, they billed me, if I remember right, they billed me for about 24 hours in the hospital, $68,000.
Jiminy.
My goodness.
Okay. And I went in there with angina. And they checked me upside down and backwards. And of course, the hospital's bill was not the full bill, because various specialists put in their bills and, you know, the ambulance company put in there. But matter of fact, the ambulance company screwed up, got my address wrong, therefore couldn't send me a bill, and decided that they would sign me over to a collection agency, which started dunning me from India. And American Medical Response, I am not through with you. But
take notice.
Yeah, really, because they drag their heels to turn off that particular money pump. But the thing is that Medicare paid, I think it was about $1,800 to settle my $68,000 bill.
Wow.
The hospital took it.
You sure they did?
Yeah, I sure am. Because they send me a statement.
Yeah.
Medicare sends me the statement that shows what they billed and what they paid.
And
so my secondary insurance probably kicked in a few hundred over that. But
see, let's look at that for a second, though, Richard, because you make some very good points there. And one of them is, you said secondary insurance. We talk about the 47 million uninsured in this country in terms of our health care crisis. But when we do that, we do a real disservice in talking about what we need in the way of universal health care, because this is all the problem. The problem is a real Hydra-headed sort of thing.
It is Hydra-headed. It's terrible.
You lop one off and you get three in its place. Because, you know, being in California, you're probably fairly familiar with the story of Nataline Sarkeesian, the young lady who died last week.
I'm so disgusted and heartsick over that.
And bear in mind, this was a young lady who had for-profit health care.
I know.
And she was failed by the for-profit health care system.
That's correct.
Now, look at factor number two. In excess of 75% of the personal bankruptcies filed in this country are medical-related, and these are people, again, who have health insurance, and they are being bankrupted by their copays.
Okay, now let me talk about those copays for a minute, because that follows on the heels of what I just mentioned. There's a racket going on here, whether on purpose or God knows what. And the racket is these phony charges, the phony rates that we're talking about.
Yes.
Let's say I went into this hospital and I did not have Medicare or the secondary insurance. I would have been given the $68,000 bill, and I would have been forced to pay that $68,000 bill. Now, if the hospital gets $1,600 from Medicare and accepts that as payment in full, what does that say? Now, the hospital doesn't want to lose money, do they?
No, they don't.
And
well, let's take a look at it from another angle, Richard. Let's say you've got for-profit health insurance.
Yeah.
And it's the typical 80-20 coverage.
That's right.
Insurance pays 80%. You pay 20%.
So it's going to be 20% of the fictitious $68,000.
Right, and let's just, so we're working with round numbers to make it easy, it's a $1,000 bill.
Right.
Well, that means that for a $1,000 bill, your insurance company for that $1,000 bill, your insurance company should be paying $800, right? You should be left holding the bag for $200.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
But because these for-profit insurance companies have schedules and contracts with these healthcare providers, they actually wind up paying out of an $800 bill, they pay on the schedule, say, $350. Now,
right,
you're still holding a bill for $200 as your 20% copay.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
But because they've accepted this schedule payment of $350 in lieu of the $800, that means, you know, what's 200? What is 200 as expressed as a fractional ratio compared to 350?
My math is lousy. What is it?
Well, I don't. You know, two thirds. It's
yeah.
It's in excess of 50%. So your copay winds up being in excess of 50%, and that is a blatant fraud.
Exactly. It is a fraud. And you know, the thing is to put some color on this. The hospital that I went to is a public hospital. And this public hospital has been in financial trouble for a very long time. And they've tried various solutions and nothing has worked. The thing is that they're located at the edge of a very poor city, and a lot of people come into the ER. It's one of only two ERs covering a very large territory, and a lot of people come into the ER and they can't pay.
No.
So it forces the whole hospital into the red. I have to honor that, and they probably will be taken over by my county system, the one I really know quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, A long time ago, I needed an MRI image. And because I really have a fondness for the county's health system, I asked for a quote. You know, how much is it going to cost me to get the scan? And they said, it's going to be $300. So then I asked my doctor, who wasn't part of this system at the time. And he said, well, go across the street. There's a little private imaging service across the street. See what they'll charge. Well, they wanted $100.
Huh.
The county, which is the health service of last resort, wants $300. The private guy wants $100. So you know where I went to get my sonogram.
Sure.
Now, a few weeks later, I thought, wait a minute, this isn't right, you know, and I called up the health service, and I spoke with a fellow who became the CEO later on. I said, where does this $300 figure come from? And he said, we charge hospital-based rates. Now, that may be the key to this. In other words, other words, there is a rate structure.
Well, yeah, and there's and that structure encompasses more more services and more personnel than the guy running the private facility. Hey, steady, Richard. I've got to roll on because I do still have blinking lights.
Okay.
And I want to get calls in because we won't be back till Wednesday.
Okay.
Bob, can I ask a favor of all the listeners real quick?
You sure
Patty's
can.
Dad, people might be familiar with Arbor Tenor, but Patty's dad is in, let's say, ill health, and he just needs some people just to think about and pray for him. He's suffering at the feet of this healthcare system, and he really needs the best care right now, and if people can just keep him in his thoughts as he's heading to Bend for medical care at this moment, that'd be appreciated by everyone.
As you say it, so shall it be done, Steady. Both of you take care, and a happy new year to you.
Yeah, and watch out for the Antichrist.
Bob. Yeah, for sure.
Have a good weekend, Richard.
Bye-bye, Steady.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, let's see, and rolling onward. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
Doing all right.
Okay, let me try to bring another caller online as well. Is that okay?
That'd be great.
Hi, who have I got?
This is Kate. Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, and you're talking to Preston, too.
Did I hear Preston? Oh, my gosh.
Hi, Kate.
Hi, how are you? You're way covered up in snow, aren't you?
Yeah, we had about 6 inches yesterday and about 7 inches on Christmas Day. It was beautiful,
mm-hmm.
actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was. I don't get KOA down here very well because I have to go to bed too early. But anyway, I'm still in Mississippi. I wanted to say, I would just jump in, Preston, because I'd rather hear you talk. I wanted to say that John Prine song you wrote, that you played, Bob, thanks for that. It always makes me grin when I hear that because I think, wow, so much for committed relationships and long-term boring stale marriages and stuff. You know, that whole blues thing. Wild women don't get the blues, and so it's, I always have to laugh
great.
When I hear that.
Great. I like John Prine, too.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of that song.
Hello in There.
Hello in There, yeah.
Hello in There.
I always think, geez, if they weren't all hooked up, they could just go out and get wild and they wouldn't have all them blues and be all that sad and stuff. And anyway, and another thing I wanted to respond to off of the show tonight was that Trent Lott's slab is still sitting empty down right off of Farmington close to the end of the...
Slab's still empty, but he's got the bucks, hasn't he?
I don't care. But people, somebody mentioned about somebody going...
Oh, that he's got his porch back and he's going to... Yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry. There is no porch. There is no house. Only a slab. So, and the other thing I wanted to respond to was that if people really, really believe what Bob was saying about... What Gunny Bob was saying about how special this is and how everything... I don't even want to know about the money, but I know there wasn't enough for the end of the month. We did not even get close to $3,500. Just, we still have time to the end of the month to send in a $5 or $10 bill to the mailbox or click the PayPal button again. We can bring it up closer to the $3,500 mark because we're already running about $4,000 in the red.
Yeah, and what we don't do just kind of has to carry over, so, you know.
Yeah. Right, and I wanted to thank whoever that was that contributed money on my behalf. That was so very cool. Very cool. It just made me cry. I thought it was so sweet.
How's the weather in Mississippi, actually?
Oh, it was 70 today. It was awful. And muggy and tornado warnings and watches and whatever. I get the two mixed up, but it turned dark about noon and it was, you know, it's pretty icky.
Okay, here's the easy way, Kate. When it's a warning, you look for a soft place to land.
Oh, okay. And when it's a watch, you just stand there and go, ooh, that's pretty, huh?
Yeah, that's I never seen sky look quite like that. Yeah, that's a watch.
I'm watching this. This is cool. and a warning is a... You look for a soft place to land, okay, or a brick wall on the other side of the room.
A tornado warning means that conditions are beyond favorable and that, in fact, a funnel cloud has been sighted in your area.
Oh, yeah, we had 3 county funnel clouds today, so it was pretty weird. And another good thing that happened, I talked to 3 people this week to see if they needed any further assistance from us or another agency or whatever. And one little guy said, oh, no, they're bringing my cottage in on 2 weeks because they had to have another piece of paper. And another lady said, no, I decided not to demolish my house. I'm going to have to get to that later. I just had to put my cottage on another property, my aunt's or something. And so and another person got theirs the week before Christmas. So three people are out of the FEMA trailers into the cottages. But they are just park models. They have FEMA trailers with porches on them. So there you go. But a church adopted a family from an Iowa church adopted a man who's raising his great grandchildren, and he will be back in his house in 6 weeks. So that's the good.
Beautiful, so, beautiful.
Okay, so Preston, I just want to hear you talk. I just want people to send some more money in because we're just Gunny Bob thinks it's so optimistic. He's so optimistic, and I don't feel that way. So I'm a gloom and doomer, and I'm thinking, you know, we can keep this going or we can let it fall apart. So. Okay, that's it. Thank you, Preston. I'm listening
Thanks
to you.
Thanks for
now.
Sharing. Did I mention to you that we have Michael Brown, Good Job Brownie fame, here in Denver? Have you heard him on KOA yet, Kate?
No. What, doing what?
It's doing a radio show. And,
what?
Yeah.
What hours?
It's sporadic. He fills in from time to time. He was doing a Sunday show kind of in the afternoon. Today he was on filling in for Peter Boyles on 6:30 KHAL, and he said something really appalling. You know, his first few shows were kind of they weren't so political. They're more like, I don't know, kind of tamer, just conversational issues. But today he had a discussion on immigration, and he had a caller call in, a guy named Ron, calls in a lot. He usually says okay things. But today he said, I wish the border would become like it was in Vietnam when I was there, and just make it a free fire zone. Shoot anything that tries to move across it.
Nice.
Ron said that?
The caller said that. Michael Brown, the host, said, yeah, I know what you mean. You know, I agree, but we can't do that because, you know, it's words to that effect. You know, I agree. I would like that too. But the problem with that, it was, what was the problem with that? You know, I was so stunned by his just agreement at first.
Yeah, you were busy sitting there with your mouth hanging open.
Exactly.
Going, yeah.
I mean, the guy's comment to begin it. Brown's acceptance of it, and he said, I want to call in the army in New Orleans to put down all the unrest, but I think he said Rumsfeld or somebody else said he can't do that because the American people wouldn't accept it. They don't want to see that kind of imagery on TV.
Well, isn't there a little legal problem there, Preston? A little something called posse comitatus?
We don't have legal problems down here.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Right.
I stand corrected. Actually, I'm sitting.
You foolish fellow, you.
Yeah. And they did it to an extent, you know, and Blackwater was there. And
sure. Well, did you catch that news story? I guess it was last night's program that was running in the top of the hour. The National Republican Rifle Association is actively soliciting people in New Orleans who had their guns taken from them.
That's right.
So that they can file a lawsuit on their behalf.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're going to be, you know, I don't think the NRA is going to be real excited with the potential plaintiffs they get out of that.
No. They're going to be the wrong color, for one thing.
They're really going to be the wrong color.
Yeah. Oh, God, oh, my.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. What happened to the white owners of the 30-06s?
Preston, is Greg still calling in on Rick's show at night?
Greg, you know, I don't catch Rick's show very much.
Then.
That's kind
Never
of
mind.
In the
this
middle
like,
of the
Yeah, right.
The
this
night.
Is like having a family reunion. It's boring to everybody but us. Anyway. No, things aren't. I mentioned something the other day to somebody, and they said ethnic cleansing, and I thought, oh, that sounds like Head On Radio. That people agreeing with me. I never did find the definition. What's the difference between ethnic cleansing and genocide? I don't quite know.
I'm not quite sure either. There's a magazine called Cultural Survival out of it's actually done by Harvard, some Harvard scholars and some volunteers, and they talk a lot about issues of genocide. They work a lot with indigenous people around the world, and yeah, it's a shame that the the Indian wars continue.
I met a nurse from Kenya, and she agreed with me. She's been here for 3 years, and she's going to be a part of the group that I want to get started on. Empowering women and teaching them how to do their own carpentry work and stuff. But I don't even know how to paint. And I said, well, we can go to Lowe's and take a class. And so we're probably going to meet the first week in January, and it's very exciting. And Bob
fantastic.
Bob said one night when we were doing that interview with Ann from Chicago, he said, you know how scary that is to people. And I said, hell yes. Like, you know, scare the hell out of them. It's all right, but we got it. Can you just imagine a whole bunch of black, brown, and tan women learning how to paint and use chainsaws and skill saws and tile saws? And oh my God! Bring on Blackwater, honey. Just train.
We have power tools, and we're pissed.
And brand new tool belt.
Oh gosh, Preston, I want to give you a shot at like a last 30 seconds or so. I just looked at the clock ahead. And we're fresh out.
Okay, great, and thank you for all the stories. I really appreciated it from everybody. I want to say something that I learned from the Lonely Planet Guide to Mexico. It's a travel guide. They do some interesting work, and they wrote a little tidbit in the intro about abortion issues, actually, and family planning issues in Mexico. They did a nice job of slowing their growth rate. But beforehand, in 68, when the Vatican banned all methods of contraception, the situation seemed kind of out of control. And in 1970, more than 600,000 Mexican women underwent illegal operations, and 32,000 died. That was in 1970. 32,000 women died from criminalized operations.
Oh.
That's something that gets left out from the pro-life group.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of their arguments, I think, have some merit, depending on what kind of theological orientation you have. But this part of the issue, they're leaving out. And also, what kinds of criminal terms are we looking at? A year in jail, 10 years,
yeah.
Execution.
Yeah.
Who knows? But anyway, I want to share that.
And death certificates for miscarriages. Sure.
Yeah,
okay, we've run right up against it. Thank you both so very much, and a very happy New Year to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank
you, Preston.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Preston. Good night, Bob.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Love these Front Porch Fridays. Thanks, everybody. Happy New Year to you. We're back on Wednesday. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistan continues to reel after the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. Her burial today at the family's mausoleum, attended by hundreds of thousands of mourners who accompanied her simple wooden casket as it was placed beside that of her father, also a former prime minister and founder of the Pakistan People's Party. At least 23 people have been killed in rioting that has been widespread and destructive in cities and towns across Pakistan. Protesters have torched hundreds of vehicles, burned down banks, office buildings, and transit stations. Paramilitary rangers have been instructed to shoot on sight anyone found to be causing disorder or destruction. The Pakistani government is naming a possible suspect in Bhutto's murder. Al-Qaeda leader Baitullah Massoud was quoted last September in a Pakistani newspaper as saying he would welcome Bhutto's return with suicide bombers. Pakistani officials say he was behind the Karachi bomb blast in October that killed more than 140 people as Bhutto re-entered the country. An Australian man captured while fighting with the Taliban in Afghanistan back in 2001, released from Guantanamo Bay prison. David Hicks completed his sentence after pleading guilty back in March of this year. He was returned to Australia to serve out the sentence, where he was promptly released today as a closely monitored security risk. The latest defense policy bill from Capitol Hill got a pocket veto from President Bush. Portions of the bill would allow those suing Iraq over the misdeeds of Saddam Hussein to freeze the country's assets while their suits are pending. Mr. Bush says he intends to let the bill die without his signature. In downtown Baghdad, a bomb exploded during Friday prayers. At least 10 Iraqis were killed, 66 were wounded. A new Bloomberg LA Times poll indicates that Barack Obama has pulled even with Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire. Obama has the support of 32% of New Hampshire Democrats, while Clinton has 30%, a statistical dead heat. Meantime, in Iowa, presidential candidates are crossing the state in search of votes to help break a tie between the Republicans and to pin down a frontrunner for the Democratic primary ticket. Authorities are warning the public that nearly 15,000 pounds of stolen ground beef may be contaminated by E. coli. American Fresh Foods reported a trailer containing the meat was stolen. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of."